Welcome to Alive and Kicking, the 90s football podcast. The podcast that's more 90s than wheeling in that TV and watching Geordie Racer. Always the best one. My name's Ash Rose, your host and your guide on this, the original 1990s football podcast. And we're getting in the mood for an 11 today. We'll get to that in a minute. I know you guys love an 11, but let me first introduce my other half on this 90s crusade. He is the landlord of the football tavern, Mr. Ed Chambers. How the devil are you, Mr. Chambers?
I'm very well, Ashley. It's good to be back, mate. It's been a very, very long time, or it feels like a very, very long time since we've done this. We've been a bit busy, yeah, the two of us. And it's often, you know, that's often the case that life gets in the way when you're making plans. It's good to be back talking 90s, and I'm looking forward to doing 11. I mean,
we have history, don't we? So we love an 11.
We've said it before that in our younger days there might have been some email traffic about 11s when actually we should have been doing some actual work, but that was in our early 20s
as well. And we're recording this on a Friday, actually. That used to be a thing, didn't it?
Definitely. Before we ended up meeting in the pub. So yeah.
And then talking about the same 11 again. Yeah, halcyon days, sir.
I know.
Yes.
What I'd give for that again.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in just a second, though. But there's been a bits going on since we've been quite 90s related as well. Bits and bobs that have been going on since we last spoke. The big news this week, and I say it's big news, but only for us now, because in its current guise, and I'm talking about Soccer AM, which has, I don't think it's officially been announced, but as good as official, that it's been cancelled for next season. Now, in its current guise, I've not watched it for years. I see clips that go on Twitter, and for me, it's got very much, it's not the same flavour, and it's still kind of talking about jumping the shark. It's trying to grab that bit, but we're living a different era where you can't really do what they used to do in the 90s and stuff. So I don't really watch it anymore. But whatever you say about Tim Lovejoy, and a lot has been said about him over the years, for a period in that late 90s, it was essential viewing, wasn't it, Soccer AM?
Oh, definitely. And I think even into the early 2000s as well, to be fair.
About a decade, but
yeah. Yeah, of course. But yeah, in the period that we cover, yeah, I mean, I think it started in either 94 it started, so it's nearly reached its 30-year anniversary. And Lovejoy came in around, I'm going to say about 96-ish, I think, because original hosts were Russ Williams, who was on Virgin Radio for a long time.
Gary Stevens,
ex-Tottenham Gary Stevens, not the Everton one. And Helen Chamberlain, of course, who was on it for most of our lives.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, I remember the first time they got Noel Gallagher on there, that seemed like a big thing. They even did like a massive advert about it, which they wouldn't normally do for any other guest. That felt like it had gone from being just a normal Saturday morning show to look at us, we're in the big time. Lovejoy is one of those characters. What I will say about Tim Lovejoy is that apparently he worked on Big Breakfast. And I think he took a lot of the energy that they had on the Big Breakfast and put that into Saturday morning TV for football fans. Now, you know, we live in an age when everything has changed, and quite rightly so. You know, you wouldn't get a show now that was doing the Soccerette and all that, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, it wouldn't happen. And we understand that. And to be fair to Lovejoy as well, I think he got out of it at roughly the right time as well. I think he sort of realised that it has a shelf life.
Yes.
And I know Max Rushton came in afterwards, and it did carry on to be, you know, semi pretty decent until recent years. But you can't be laddish for 30 years.
No.
You know, the people it was originally aimed at was people of our age and slightly older, back in the 90s. And we're all, you know, in our 40s now, and we're not really watching it because we've got kids who want to watch other things, or we're doing things on Saturday mornings, you're taking your kids to classes, or you're going out to football yourself, or whatever.
You got to look at Laddish as well. Like, it comes to a point where weird. I mean, Laddish isn't really a thing anymore, but even if it, even in the element that it is now, and you know, you look at Jimmy Bullard and think, you know, it's kind of, should he be acting that way? I mean, you know, that's another podcast.
Yes.
It, as you say, I mean, it was essential viewing, and you know, things like, you know, the wrestling guys, the easy stuff, save the shit, the dance offs, the soccerette. There was so much, the fans of the week, the game at the end that changed every season, whatever type of hole you had to get the ball in, you know, all those were just part of what we watched before we went to football. And
absolutely. Yeah, and as I say, it did have some really, really good moments on it, and it had some really, really good guests as well.
Great guests. I mean, the guests were, you know, I remember they used to get, you know, I will obviously work in a WWE field. They used to get those guys on. Most of them hadn't got a clue what they were appearing on. And I remember they picked it to teams out of a hat to be, and then you were like, yeah, you're a Nottingham Forest fan. Or
And like, I'm just making this up now, but in what world would you get like an EastEnders actor sitting next to Pat Van Den Howe? Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like, you know, it was just, it was a very, very...
football 90s fever dream, wasn't it? There was, it all came to, and you mentioned the Big Breakfast, but it was also part of the zeitgeist of Saturday morning telly. Like, we grew up on Live and Kicking and Going Live and that. And it was a little bit like that, with a slightly older, because there was that Laddish and, you know, Helen Chamberlain kind of Ladette, if you
will. But you found yourself kind of switching from Soccer AM over to Channel 4 Gazzetta Italia at the same time. The two shows ran sort of concurrently. So, you know, that was an essential Saturday morning viewing. Yeah. So, as I say, it's a bit like when they announced that the final score was going to leave of the Radio 5. Everyone was like, oh, right, that's a shame. And then they realised that they probably hadn't listened to it for years. Yeah. So I thought it was a shame. And like you, I haven't watched it for at least 5 years. No. So I thought, well, it hasn't bothered my life one bit, to be perfectly honest.
I hope I think there's room for something on a Saturday morning different.
Definitely.
And they do that social thing that's got a lot of, you know, YouTubers and people like that, which I'm sure does very well for them. It's not aimed at me.
Yeah.
Something like that will be extended or something. But it used to be on for like, didn't Soccer AM used to be on for like 4 hours as well?
Yeah. Like, it went, it was at one stage, it was definitely, it used to finish 12? It went on to 12. I think it was 8 till 12 at one date. So you used to sometimes come down with a hangover and sit there and stare at the TV for a while.
It was good for that. That's what it was. That's what it was aimed at, for sure. But yeah, so Soccer AM, farewell, you know, well, whatever you think of it, the 90s, it was class. Anything else you wanted to throw into the mix that we've missed during this sort of last time we spoke?
Yeah, so I think a few 90s bits that are sort of floating around. I was gonna mention that Watford have got another manager. So Slaven Bilic got the bullet. He was a 90s name, wasn't he? Sort of West Ham and Everton, and you know, obviously in the Croatia 98 team and what have you. But there's so many players in the last couple of weeks that have turned 50, and these were like, because obviously, you know, they're older than us, but back in the day, these were the young kids coming through. Darren Anderton is now 51. Wow. You know, Chris Sutton, Edgar Davids, Steve Froggatt, friend of the show, Steve Froggatt. There's so many others. That Ray Parler was another one. They'll turn 50, and I was like, wow, I remember when, like, start of the Premier League, these are the young guns. These are the, when you read your Match magazine and your Shoot magazines, these were the kids being featured as one to look out for the future. You know, somewhere AD Mike is probably 50.
Jamie Forrester is always the one.
Jamie Forrester, another one at Leeds. Yeah, he's probably in his 50s now as well, but obviously it highlights again how far away we are getting from the decade in question and how much older we are getting. But that's something. And then I picked up another one the other day and I just thought, I have to mention this on the show. So there was a story about Ronan Keating recently. Have you seen this?
I have not seen this. I've still not forgiven for covering Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls, but go on.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, terrible.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Boo you, Ronan. He's to become a granddad.
Oh dear.
Right. So this is like, that kind of blew my mind a bit. It was like Boyzone in my head, like they're still a boy band from the 90s. And, you know, obviously Ronan went on to have his solo career or what have you, but I was like,
roller coaster.
And I was like, oh God. And it's gonna be a granddad.
Granddad Ronan.
Yeah. Granddad Ronan, yeah. So it just, you know, just made me stop in my tracks a thing and think, bloody hell, you know. You don't see Gary Barlow as a granddad. Probably hasn't got any kids, I don't know, but you know, what's next? We'll hear that Gary Barlow's a granddad. You know, something along those lines. But so that was,
I suppose, and it's like Ian Wright's grandson, isn't it? Playing for, was it Stoke, is he at, I think?
Stoke, yeah. Playing for Stoke, yeah. And also you know, this, I think it's been a championship actually, sort of, you drop Stoke in there, but I noticed Blackburn are still sort of hovering around the playoffs, and obviously managed by John Dahl Thomason, yeah, which I absolutely love. But there are a sprinkle of 90s names around the championship that seem to be doing good things at the minute. Obviously, we'll leave QPR out of that conversation.
Yeah, but, all in that category, but good thing. Yeah. Actually, they're not happening at the moment. So
when you'll gloss over that one. Exactly. But yeah, so it's quite a few things going on.
Michael Carrick, he's doing very well at Middlesbrough. He may be back end of the 1990s.
Absolutely, yeah. So,
I think, with a bit of a gamble appointments. Well, to be honest, when at the start of the season, when Blackburn appointed John Dahl Thomason, and appointed Mike or Mickey, whatever he wants to be called, Bill,
yeah,
the snake, as we like to say. It was like, what would be the more random appointment, you know, manager who hadn't done it before, or this random 90s footballer that had done quite well abroad but hadn't managed in England or in the Championship. And he's done all right. He's done a good job. He's very bad, though. Like, he had a very short spell at Newcastle, didn't he? He wasn't
better. Yeah.
But he did well at Milan. Was it Milan? He was at Milan.
Milan, yeah. So this, it's always like there's so many 90s things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. I'm struggling to remember. Oh, of course, Trevor Sinclair was 50 as well.
Wow.
He of the overhead kick.
The greatest overhead kick. There's a goal I meant to do. I think I've done it before on the feed, because everyone does that goal on his birthday. It was Roy Wade's last weekend as well, by the way. But he's not 50. He's older than that. 51, actually. I think he was 50 last year, if I remember rightly. We exchanged text about QPR. And
then the child
inside me was just like, it's Roy Wiggle, he's texting me again.
Your wife must just laugh at you.
She does most days, actually. although, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I was going to post the goal. It's a great goal. He scored for QPR that same season. It's a chip against Man City, but I didn't, but maybe.
Which
is also a great goal. I'm sure he doesn't get tired of people tweeting and posting about that.
I'm sure.
He did score other great. He scored a great goal for West Ham as well, I think, like a volley, if I remember rightly. I can't remember. Anyway. I'm sure more things will pop in ahead as we go, but let's crack on. What we're doing today, people, is as we get into the business end of the season, as they like to call it, and everyone's thinking about title runs and title run-ins and things like that, we're putting together an 11 with a title running twist. So what's your objective to, if you want to play along at home, is picking an 11 from the title winners of the 1990s. Now, that gives you two players from Liverpool in 1990, Arsenal, 91, Leeds 92, Blackburn 95, and then we've got Man United, obviously. So it works out two players from each and three to Man United, if that makes sense, to make up your 11. In terms of the Man United, choose what year. I'm not going to make you choose between which years. They won it enough times in the 1990s. But we'll make it clearer as we go, I think, because I don't know if I made that as clear as possible. We'll go for it. I think Ed's still doing his as we speak. So let's go for a little break, and then we'll get cracking on our 11 after this.
Sit back and enjoy a nostalgic ride through the decade that truly changed the face of football. If the 90s are now retro, then it's time for a celebration. Welcome to Alive and Kicking, the 90s football podcast.
Welcome back to Alive and Kicking, where we're knee-deep in title winners as we pick an 11 from all the people that won the Premier League / First Division in the 1990s as we head towards the end of the season in the modern day 2023. Should we kick off with goalkeepers? As we, as is Oh, I actually did think, should we kick off with the front two? Because what normally happens when we do these 11s is that we go through everyone and then we start to run out of time when we do the front two. Should we be really okay. Do the front two first?
Okay, my front two are really bloody obvious.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought the front two is going to be the most obvious as well.
Yeah.
So should we be a bit bonkers? Do the front two, then go back to front to goalkeeper.
Okay, yeah. Let's do that then.
Okay, so I'm trying to think who's good. You probably guess my front two more than I probably guess your front. Well, let's say we've both got Alan Shearer.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can have a title-winning team without the bloke that literally carried another 10 blokes on his shoulders and won the title for Blackburn. He scored 30 to 35 goals, I think, that season. There's no way, even if you were to pick, even if this was, you know, pick some average players that have won the title, I would still put Alan Shearer in there because you can't have a team without him. He was phenomenal. You know, the only thing I have seen since in comparison is what Haaland is doing right now. I think.
You've got to give Harry Kane his flowers, man.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. But Tottenham aren't pushing for the title. Where City are. But yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, Shearer's, you know, it's got to be in there, isn't it?
Yeah,
has to be.
I've based this has to be. Not, I should have said this at the start, but I've not picked the best because I think that's boring.
No, I've picked a mixture.
Best because they happen to be, but they are. But they're mainly players I liked watching during that time.
Yeah, definitely.
Title and fit into this. Don't you can people listening? You can do it the best if you want. You can interpret it how you are. But I, instead of just going, for instance, here's, you know, Gary Neville at right back. I've tried to mix it up a little bit. But yeah, even when you do that, you can't ignore. And when you're talking Blackburn, if you're clicking right, I'm going to pick two players from Blackburn.
Yeah.
Say. Shearer, well, he can pick Sutton, obviously, but Shearer is a start. And then the rest of them, they were very much a team built of some of their parts, weren't they?
Yeah. No. And to say they won the league just because of Shearer is actually doing them a disservice, really, because, you know, he was the main goal scorer, but they were a good side. There's no, you know, there's no two ways about it. And they had some very good players. So, but yeah, I've gone for Shearer.
Yeah, no, me too. I've gone for Shearer as well. And especially that season where I just felt like, yeah, he was probably the best striker in Europe, at least, you know,
easily. Yeah.
You know, easily. I know a couple of years before we'd see him go to Newcastle for that record amount, but I think, it's a bit like, I think he can do everything. And, and we're preaching to the people who know here, like we can talk about here is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I've gone very obvious to partner him up front from Arsenal from 1998. Dennis Bergkamp, man. It's got to be.
Oh, no. You see, I haven't done that.
Oh, interesting. Well, let me go. I don't need to wax. I'll wax lyrical for just a second, obviously.
Of course.
Just to say that I think I've said it ad nauseum on here. I think he's my favourite import in Premier League history. I don't think there's a player still to this day that I've seen play the game like Dennis Bergkamp. It's hard to describe to people, it's a younger generation, what type of player Dennis Bergkamp was. He was kind of a number 10 before that number 10 even really existed. He didn't have pace, but he had a brain that was ridiculous. He scored goals that I'm still to this day, and people always talk about the Newcastle one, but I'm with you. The Sunderland Roker Park goal is my favourite Bergkamp goal.
And it's an awesome goal.
Because it was typical Bergkamp, that curler. That was trademark Bergkamp, but the little skill, little pirouette beforehand, chef kiss. That was. So yeah, I've gone, and I think they complement each other quite well, Alan Shearer and Dennis Bergkamp.
True.
That would be unstoppable.
I think that's an awesome front too, actually, because Bergkamp took a little while to settle, didn't he, in the Premier League. Took a few months, I suppose, like most foreign imports, I suppose, that come to our shores. And but you know, inspirational signing, and you know, he stayed the best part of 10 years, didn't he? So, you know, it's a very much a very, very talented individual. So, yeah, that's a good choice, sir.
So who's your other obvious one then? Go on.
Seriously, it's like, have we never met?
No.
So, Eric Cantona.
Oh, do you know what? Because I don't always class him as a striker.
Right, okay.
I thought he's a midfielder, but again, he's playing in that.
Well, yeah. So I would say Bergkamp was the same, personally.
Yeah, true. I'm a Bergkamp man. I mean, I love Gerrit Kanstar, but not to the point where I idolise. It's probably too strong, but like,
yeah,
it doesn't come into my consciousness as much.
But, I love Eric Cantona. I'm not even going to even hide away from that. I love the fact that he came in. I mean, he came into Man United and sort of changed the whole place. Sort of changed overnight. I love the way he is. I loved his kind of arrogance to an extent. I also loved the bit of controversy that would always follow him around as well. You know, obviously I don't condone smacking a supporter, but you know, that sort of thing. You know, there was times when he got sent off two or three games in a row, and it's just, I like a bit of drama.
Yeah.
And he provided that and more, but at the same time, he won Manchester United leagues. You know, the first title wouldn't have been won without the introduction of Eric
Cantona United, not Cantona Leeds.
Yeah. Yes, sorry, I'm picking. Oh, of course, I never even because I said that. So yeah, I'm picking him as Manchester United player. But they won the first Premier League title on the back of his signing. When he returned from his suspension, they relentlessly chased down Newcastle. So many games were 1-0 Cantona in that run-in to the end of the season. Some of the goals he scored as well in that run-in were phenomenal. It still blows my mind, and I think this is also why I love him, is that he just retired when he felt like it.
Yeah.
You know, he was 30, and he's brilliant as well. I read something about this the other day. He said, I've been playing football for 13 years now, so I think it's time to call it a day. Whereas most, you know, players of his ilk, I suppose, would go on for at least another five.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in terms
of, try to cling on, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. But he was like, no, I've just won, you know, I've just won the Premier League again, and off I go to just go and be an actor, which is brilliant. And even now when I see him on a TV advert, I'll be pointing at the screen going, it's Eric Cantona. And my wife will be like, yeah, I know, because you say that every time that advert comes on. So yeah, for that, I think I don't like to undersell Cantona as just being this nutter, but I think he was a genius at the same time. I do think he was a very, very good footballer, and
perfect time as well. Like, I don't think more stars have aligned for many footballers in any decade than him and Man United.
No, definitely.
It was timing for everyone.
Yeah, it was a match. It was definitely a match made in heaven. That one, they, you know, I think, funnily enough, I think Man United needed Eric Cantona as much as Eric Cantona needed Manchester United, because you know he'd lost his way a little bit in France. You know, was at Leeds, doing all right at Leeds, obviously, doing well at Leeds. And then, but yeah, they just needed each other. And he was the catalyst. So for that reason, I've gone for Eric Cantona.
Nice. Well, two front twos that would scare the lives out of many decades, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, it was good. I thought we'd get the front two out because...
Yeah, definitely.
Obvious, and
good idea.
Often rush them at the end. So let's go back to the beginning then. Let's talk goalkeepers. I think this was like... When you think about it, every time I started to think about goalkeepers, you can't go wrong here. And you always say, it reminds me of something you said, that title winning teams, you have to have a first class goalkeeper. And I think all these teams really did. So I think you can't go wrong in who you pick. But for some reason, growing up, there are a few more images that make me feel all warm and nostalgic coziness than seeing Bruce Grobler in that bright green goalie top that had the fleck on it.
Yeah.
Most of the time with some long black joggers as well, for some, because he was always a man. He was a man who liked a bit of joggers as well, or the alternate kit shorts, the grey shorts that the Liverpool had at the time. It's just an image of that great, because we kind of come into the Liverpoolness of our growing up right at the end of their dominance, of their, you know, the great team of the 80s. We kind of saw the back end of that, and they won the title in 1990. And Grobler was still their number one. He was a mad. I hadn't seen a goalkeeper who'd come out his box and do all the maverick things that he did. We all know, you know, later in that decade, things got a bit awry for him, let's say, allegedly, as they always say. But at that time, he was still a fantastic goalkeeper. He was from this weird, far out place I'd never heard of Zimbabwe, which, you know, I think there's only been a three or four Zimbabwean players in the Premier League or First Division ever since. And yeah, I just that image of Bruce Grobler and getting the Panini stickers of Bruce Grobler, and the fact that, you know, he was a title-winning goalkeeper, we've had that room for the little bit of the craziness and a little bit of the wall. I plump for him ahead of some of the great names that have obviously played in goal for these teams. So yeah, I've gone for Grobler in goal.
I know what you mean, actually, about that the kit. I mean, you know, I'm not a necessary man for the kits either, but the nostalgia of kits, I do like that sort of green tie. And even that Liverpool kit that they had that year, it kind of, whenever I see it now, I'm like, it does make you feel very, very nostalgic for your first sort of season, I suppose, as liking football. So yeah, Bruce, a good choice. I suppose along the Cantona theme, I suppose I do love a bit of drama as well, that he would sort of bring the ball out of the area and you're like, oh, the goalkeepers do that? You know, it's commonplace these days, but you know, he would do things that not necessarily your normal functioning goalkeeper would do. Plus, you know, call it what it is, there was a bit of drama around the whole bung scandal as well. Yeah. I mean, I find that fascinating.
He also smacked Stephen Manham in the face once.
And he also had that ridiculous ponytail. Do you remember that? It was like a stick on. It was like, I don't know why I've just put it to the back of my neck because nobody could see it, but it was like he bought it in a shop and then just attached it to the back of his head, which is probably what he did.
To be fair, he's tattooed like that anyway. Like, his tattoos are so perfect that it doesn't look real at times. A bit Gary Penrise like.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Only Fools and Horses when Rodney touches one of these sort of ponytails to his head because he's trying to impress Cassandra. And every time I see that scene, I always think of Bruce Crumpler. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, because it's the ponytail thing, but it just always reminds me of Bruce Crumpler. So I have gone for, drum roll please. I've gone for David Seaman, actually.
Nice. Yeah.
I was going to go for Peter Schmeichel, and then I thought Peter Schmeichel's bloody obvious. Like, if I was sitting at home listening to this, I'd be like, right, they're just going to pick Peter Schmeichel because he was the best keeper of the decade, trademark. Even if you're not sure and you don't think that, you very rarely, rarely hear people say it. It's almost the given that Schmeichel was the best goalie of the decade. David Seaman came in to Arsenal in 1990. And as you've said already, you have to have a good...
From where?
From Queen's Park Rangers, surprisingly. and you have to have a good goalkeeper to win a league. That's a given. You have to. And so David Seaman came in. They lost one game in the league all season. They lost one game in the League Cup. And they lost one game in the FA Cup, obviously. So they got knocked out by Tottenham and Man United. So three teams they lost to were Chelsea, Tottenham and Man United. Probably the three teams that Arsenal probably wouldn't pick to lose to. Great. But they were almost invincible. They were a good side. And Seaman was the kind of, you know, the new boy. But he was the goalkeeper that stood behind that famous back four. And then, of course, did it for an entire decade and more. He had a very, very good career.
Still making world-class saves. What was that, 03? That
save? Yeah, oh, that one for Pescasedo. Yeah, Jesus, what a save that is. I still don't know how he did that, actually. That's incredible, especially given the fact that he was a lot older as well. But
and his ponytail,
in a way. Another one. No, that's another. Yeah, perhaps we should just pick a ponytail 11.
When we run out of content, that's...
we're picking a ponytail 11. I've just got Brian Kilcline in my head now. But yeah, Dave Seaman was an exceptional goalie. What's your thoughts on Seaman? I just turned into a 10-year-old child there, sorry. What are your thoughts on the goalkeeper that is called David Seaman?
Oh, I would probably, in my personal preference, having my above Schmeichel. I know
Schmeichel, really?
You know, he was the best goalkeeper of the decade, but I think maybe because Seaman was English and he was the goalkeeper during that period in the mid-90s, obviously Euro 96 and France 98, that he was again up there with the best goalkeepers in the world. And you don't play for Arsenal in that back four, and then when Wenger took over, it's not like he came in and went, oh, actually, no, I don't trust, I need another new keeper. You know, he went with David Seaman because he was still a fantastic goalkeeper. Well remembered at Rangers. He was a little bit before my time, if I'm honest, at Loftus Road. Obviously very young as well, but he was seen as always going to be the next step up from us to whoever he was going to go to.
Yeah.
But I remember when they had the famous story when he joined Arsenal that they used to sing. They preferred John Lukic, which was when in
high. Did they really?
Yeah, I think you know that we all agree that
Lukic is better. Oh my god!
The charm that they used to sing when he first signed, because John Lukic was it was a great keeper. I mean, never.
Of course.
Did he get England cap? I don't think he did.
I don't think he did. No, I don't think so.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. When B was a thing.
Yeah. He always looked like Neil from Art Attack. Anyway, that's a different.
Great show.
Yeah.
But Seaman, great pick. And you can obviously get him from 91 or 98, so he works quite nicely.
Yeah, I always thought that David Seaman's career was almost cut into two parts. So the first, in terms of the 90s and beyond, so 90 to 95, you'd sort of say he was, you know, he was unflappable, really. There was nothing that would have fazed him. And then the Naeem moment happened, and he's remembered for that. And then you've got 96, redeems, you know, brings himself back to the fore. The penalty save against Spain was just brilliant. You know, that whole event was just brilliant. And then, of course, at the back end, he's got the Ronaldinho thing. And people, and I feel sorry for not just David Seaman, sometimes I feel sorry for goalkeepers in general, that they get remembered for the crap things rather than nobody remembers like 15 brilliant saves. Whereas we've talked about Alan Shearer. If Alan Shearer misses a sitter in a very important game for Blackburn against Man United, for example, no one really remembers that because he scored 30 plus goals. Whereas Dave Seaman, you know, people instantly say Ronaldinho Naeem. So but that's the life.
You think of like someone like Massimo Taibbi, who obviously had a great career in Italy.
Yeah.
When you say Taibbi, what do you think? You think of
Matt Letizia.
I think he was man of match in the game before that against Chelsea. Yeah.
Liverpool, I think.
Chelsea they lost quite, was it 5-0 or something?
Yeah. But so that's the life of a goalkeeper, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Grobbelaar's team, I mean, of course, you could have had Schmeichel, Tim Flowers, John Lukic, who we've already mentioned as well. So there was a lot in the mix there. Not really. Edwin van der Gaal? No, was it Raymond van der Gaal?
Raymond van der Gaal,
I mixed Edwin van der Sar and Raymond van Gaal then.
Somewhere there's a bloke called Raymond van der Sar going, that's me!
That's me! Both Dutch. Surely that would happen. Right, fullbacks then, shall we do? I went first the last time, so go on, who have you got in your fullback positions?
Right, so I'm going to slightly cheat here.
You always have a cheat, go on.
I know. So right back, I've gone for Dennis Irwin, even though he played majority left back for the decade for Man United, but he did play right back for Ireland quite a bit, if memory serves. So I'm getting that on a technicality, but there's nothing to say about Irwin that I haven't said before. Brilliant with both feet, great defender, great going forward. And great defender, you know, very, very consistent. You talk about players like Cantona who win you games. Man United are still not going to be as successful as they were in that decade without players like Dennis Irwin. That's just a fact. Brilliant free kick taker. That gets lost. I think that gets lost quite a bit, actually, due to the emergence of Beckham. And obviously his wonderful talents with free kicks. There were other United players that could do the same. Obviously, Cantona used to score with a few free kicks as well. But Dennis Irwin scored a few corkers in his time, and that often gets overlooked, mainly because two reasons, because of the two people I've mentioned, and also probably because he's a fullback and it's just not that sexy a position.
Now. Wasn't then, but it is now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in today's money, Irwin would be a superstar. Yeah. You know, he really was that good. So yeah, I've gone for Dennis Irwin.
On the other side,
I've gone for a Leeds option. I've gone for Tony DiRigo.
Oh, the first match, sir.
Yeah. So I've got. Oh, really? You got DiRigo as well.
DiRigo as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I've gone for. There's two reasons why I've gone for DiRigo. One is I think he was a good footballer, very fast, if I remember right. He suited that Leeds team. I think they needed that sort of player to run up and down the wing and support. I think it was Gary Speed that used to play in front of him. God bless him. And DiRigo was a good player, and it was a very good signing. And the other reason is that I walked into the living room last night and my wife was watching, Married at First Sight Australia?
Yeah.
And I sat down and watched it for 30 seconds. And this is how my brain works. And my first thought was, no wonder Tony DiRigo pissed off from Australia and came over here, because this is a load of old nonsense. And I don't know why Tony DiRigo was my first thought, why I didn't think of any other famous Australian that's moved here, but I went for Tony DiRigo. So, and I think he was unlucky to an extent that Stuart Pearce was Stuart Pearce.
Queen, wasn't he? Because he had Pearce, and then Graham the So kind of came.
Yeah.
So then he went further down the pecking order.
Yeah, so DiRigo got in around the Graham Taylor era. When Pearce,
World Cup, wasn't he? He played.
He played in the third and fourth place playoff, and he played a bit for Taylor when Pearce broke his leg around 93. I think DiRigo was playing. I think DiRigo nearly scored in that night in Rotterdam. Actually, I think he hit a free kick. Might be wrong. Nearly scored, but as I say, yeah, good player, and just generally unlucky that he had decent left backs ahead of him. Otherwise, he'd have got more caps for England.
Yeah, no, and he was integral to that Leeds team, as you say. I think he played pretty much every game that season. Leeds, and they're very good defence. Because that Leeds defence is very much of that era as well. When you think, Chris White,
Chris Fairclough was the other one. Yeah,
Chris Fairclough.
Yeah.
Mel Sterland.
It's like, great names.
Yeah, that was a unit. They were very 90s, and DiRigo was probably the one that got most acclaim in terms of, at least internationally.
Yeah, he could play in today. He could play into that type of he could play in today's game, no doubt.
And also, he was part of one of our live shows, so I had to put him in. It would be rude.
Of course.
I have put Nigel Winterburn, who also was part of one of our live shows in the past as well. So
basically, what you're saying is that your favourite left back out of the two is Tony DiRigo.
I think he is. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Winterburn was very good, very consistent. But yeah, I think the bombingness of, that's not a word, but you know, the way he's cut down, and great hair.
Great hair. And also, Tony DiRigo didn't shit it from Paolo Di Canio.
Very true. I did tweet last weekend, then went during, Mitrovic pushed that referee, and I was, he stood quite firm. I did wonder if Mitrovic pushed Paul Alcock, how far he would have fallen.
Yeah. He'd have probably ended up in Stockport.
So I've got DiRigo on my right back. I've gone Man United, and this is I'm going to play my QPR link card because I didn't.
Here we go.
But I think this player gets overlooked in the Man United story. Paul Parker was an integral part of the Man United's first championship winning team in 1993 and 93. Coming back off the World Cup earlier earlier that decade as well. Great defender, pulled the ferret because he was a small in stature, but he played centre back for a lot of his career, even though he was a smaller guy. But he was such a good man marker, couldn't get around him. Great for QPR, but also great for Man United. I mean, I think Man United needed that kind of player at that time.
Definitely.
Consistent, no thrills, you know, Neville not ready yet. Neville would come in a couple of seasons later. So I think underrated Paul Parker. So I went Parker, and I went
definitely
for my fullback.
Definitely, that's a great shout. Paul Parker was a very, very good footballer. There's no doubt about that, and a very, very good defender. I seem to recall him playing sweeper once as well.
Yeah, I played all
the way back. His Man United career, it just sort of, I don't know if there's injury related, but it just seemed to. Once Neville turned up, it just seemed to drop off.
He did have injury in that second season, I think.
And then he went round the houses a bit. He played about six or seven games for Chelsea, actually, Paul Parker. And stuff like that. It just, his career just seemed to peter out.
And this will mean nothing to anyone else but me and you, really, that he managed Welling.
He did.
He was South East London-ish. One of our
local clubs. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, man. In the middle then, centre-back wise, I've gone for blood, gut and thunder in my centre-halves. So from Man United, my first Man United pick, I've gone for Yap Stam.
That's your second Man United pick, I'd like to point out.
Who else did I pick?
Paul Parker.
My second Man United. Yap Stam, phenomenal.
Brilliant.
Defender. Just for that period, I mean, I know it didn't end well, and I think United fans would probably wanted him to stay a bit longer just because such a colossal of a defender. And
awesome.
Just scary. Like the bloke, he looked like a zombie on like just something else that had just been beefed up, and such an integral part of that treble win inside. He was almost like the final defensive touch they needed to just win that Champions League.
Yeah.
And be.
I'm 40 years of age and I've never met Yap Stam, and I'm scared of Yap Stam.
Well, he's a manager for a while. I don't know.
He just looks massive. He just looks like a massive, massive guy. And that's how he looked in comparison to other players on the pitch. Not too many people got the better of him. I think his debut in the Charity Shield wasn't too good. I think Nicholas Anelka might have, ruined him a bit. But
probably his kryptonite, wasn't it?
Yeah. But brilliant defender. And as you say, a crucial reason as to why they went on to win the Champions League and the treble.
Yeah. And alongside him, he often gets used, mentioned mistakes and things people remember. This guy won the Premier League and was an integral part of this Blackburn team. But what he's always remembered for is Paul Gascoigne flicking the ball above his head.
Yeah.
But that season, Colin Hendry was so... I know we talked earlier about them being the sum of their parts, but what they had at the back was an absolute leader. Have you got him? You put your hand.
I'm going to say ding, ding, ding. I've got him as well.
I think Blackburn is the hardest to pick two players from because once you pick Shearer, you could pick Sutton, but then you've got two strikers there and you've kind of kicked yourself in the foot.
I did toy with picking Graham Lasso, actually.
Me too. Ripley, Sherwood,
Will Cox. Yeah.
They're way down the pecking order in terms of the players you could pick. So
I've gone for Colin Hendry as well, due to the fact that it's very, very difficult to win the Premier League whilst looking like Pat Butcher. Obviously he had to contend with, you know, Frank leaving and meeting Roy and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was, you know, but he was a very good player. He played for Blackburn at the back end of the 80s.
Yeah.
And then went to Man City, but then came back again under Dalglish when they were in what is now the Championship. So he served his time at Blackburn, and his day came, you know, that day at Anfield when they won the league. So yeah, he was a like you say, blood and thunder kind of guy, wasn't he? He was a tough tackling centre half, and I think we all like to see that. He's on Twitter, by the way, Colin Hendry.
The Euro 96 moment, which I think he probably gets asked about on a weekly basis.
Yeah, poor bugger. I feel sorry for him, but I don't feel sorry for him because it's a brilliant goal and England won 2-0. But it's everyone remembers that rather than the other stuff. But that's life.
Yeah. So you've got Hendry, and who else, sir?
I've gone a double H. I have gone, just to prove to the kids that we are old bastards, I have gone for Alan Hansen.
Right.
Alan Hansen.
Hopefully Herman Hrydason, they're the one that leads.
So Alan Hansen, what I love about this as well is that I looked this up. Alan Hansen was born in 1955, which makes him older than my dad, which I think he's the only player in my team that is older than my parents. So Hansen, we only got to see, and I don't really remember it that much, to be honest, but the back end of the 89-90 season, he then got injured for the following season completely, pretty much. So we didn't really see. But just to prove that I'd seen him play, which I have, actually, I did get to see him play live once, I think. So I have gone for Hansen. Also, just due to the fact that he was very prominent in our childhoods on Match of the Day. And talk about being remembered for one thing, he was a great pundit. But of course, the only thing everyone ever remembers is the thing he said about the kids. They casually forget about the time that he said that defender needs shooting 2 days after the Colombian defender had been shot at the World Cup. I don't know if you remember that, but
now you say it, but yeah, I do.
Yeah, but
that Liverpool team is so funny to me because, like, even though it's just a year off, like we talk about the Arsenal team, people like Hansen and Glenn Hussein, they just feel like from another era, even though it was just they were playing in those early.
Because of Glenn Hussein's hair, he looked older than my dad does now. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he had grey hair, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Away kit, didn't it?
Yeah, he did. So, that Liverpool team, like players like Stevie Nicol, who's a very overlooked footballer. Steve Nicol's won like 4 or 5 league titles. He's the European Cup as well, I think.
Did he get double figures or was in the top scorers for Liverpool?
And he got... he got a hat-trick in one game. I mean, this is obviously 80s stuff, but you don't hear about players like Steve Nicol because it's pre-Premier League, sadly.
In the 1992, kids, that's what we say.
Absolutely.
Right. Midfield then. I love my midfield. When it was formed, I was like, that's a 90s midfield. Let's do, as we did there with the fullbacks, do middle. So in my, I quite like this balance. I've gone for Gary Speed from 1992. Very young Gary Speed at that time.
And of course.
Absolutely crucial to that Leeds team who won the league. I mean, that midfield with McAllister and Strachan, I mean, those three and Batty, of course. And you could pick any one of them. But I went for Speed just because I think he was seen as like the young, up-and-coming... And he went on to have a fantastic career. I think one of the most highest appearance maker in the Premier League, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, brilliant footballer.
Yeah, a quality footballer. 41 games, 7 goals that season as well. So goals from midfield were almost always important for title-winning teams. And you know what? And I don't like to get dark about this. His sad passing is one of the most affected I've been by somebody I don't know. And I don't even know why. I think because it was so shocking and so...
Definitely.
And somebody who I've grown up watching and really respected and liked. It's one I always remember that day being really like...
Whoa. Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It really was horrible, especially he was on Football Focus the day before as well, I think, as well. But and also there's that image. I always think that image of, I think it's Shea Given playing for Villa. And like Speed is one of his best friends. Yeah. And they're all sitting there doing a minute silence. They're about to play a game and Shea Given's in bits. Like, and you're like, Jesus, like that... Yeah, but what a footballer, and right. talk about someone who could head a ball. My God, he was good at that.
From what I never met.
No, definitely not. No, he had a leap on him, that's for sure.
Yeah, and alongside him, kind of complimenting his kind of forward runs and passing. I've gone for a bit of defensive, and he's somebody that now I don't like him. I don't admire him as much as I did as growing up. But in those early Man United teams, I really loved Paul Ince.
Funnily enough, I feel the same.
Yeah, I don't know if it is now. I don't know. Maybe it's the whole governor thing that I know a bit more now. And as a pundit, I don't always think he makes the most cohesive point. So
no, I'd agree with that. He was a great player. Really, really good player.
The goal he scored for Man United at Loftus Road, I think it was on Monday Night Football. Overhead kick by the back post, and and overhead kicks are obviously hard, but this wasn't as glorious as some of the great ones of Trevor Sinclair and Colly Moore and Rivaldo or whatever. But to do it in a smaller, like, cause there was players all around it because it was from a corner, if I think, or at least from across on the right flank. It was a great goal, and he's just had that ability to pop up with goals, but also had that steel about him. I loved him for England as well. I
think there's that image of him in Rome, isn't there? Covered in the sort of Terry Butcher type blood, you know. Really good footballer. I just seem to recall when he went to Inter Milan, it was a real shock.
Yeah.
Because you didn't really see it coming. And it was like, wow, like Paul Ince is going to, you know, Italy. You know, it was like Man United is telling, you know, why are they doing that? Because he was such a good... You know, he was like the linchpin of the midfield, really. You know, very, very good player. Obviously, he's not very... It's strange, isn't it? It's a bit like Michael Owen. He's not necessarily popular in Manchester because he went to Liverpool, and he's not necessarily popular in Liverpool because he played for Man United. So it's one of those. But I know what you mean about the punditry thing as well. I've listened to him a few times, and I've not... necessarily agreed. That doesn't make him a bad person or whatever.
He's a bit stuck in the past in terms of football. Slightly, I mean, I'm surprised he's done as well as he's done at Reading, coming back into management, because I thought he would.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, and I think the self-appointed governor thing. I think he often backs down, and then you learn that should he have taken the penalty that Gareth Southgate ended up taking at Euro '96? We'll never know. So,
who have you got, sir, in your centre midfield?
I've got I've got the same two clubs, just two different people.
I think you've got Roy Keane.
I have to have Roy Keane. So that's my third Man United player. So I'm all out of Man United players now, which then makes me realise I didn't pick Kantelskis, which I'm a bit disappointed about.
Good idea.
Roy Keane, very impressive coming into Nottingham Forest. As a young kid, you know, all the stories you hear about him at Nottingham Forest, everybody was impressed by this kid about how good he was. And then obviously the big move to Man United, which then propels him to this, eventually to this iconic captain stage where standards have to be so, so high, and that you have to meet those standards. And I'm always impressed by that. He didn't necessarily go to work to be everybody's best mate. He wanted to win. Now, you know, there's pros and cons of that. He's probably not got a load of friends, but, you know, he's got the career that a lot of people would have wanted, and just an all-round good player. So, yeah, I've gone for Roy Keane. He's not, you know, I appreciate that, you know, the tackle on Haaland and the thing he stamped on Gareth Southgate, and, you know, they're not nice things. They're not nice things to watch. But in terms of being a footballer, very good footballer, so I've gone for Roy Keane.
He's obviously one I looked at. I think because as a kid, I didn't like Man United because it was the in thing to do. Roy Keane was always like, oh God, Roy Keane. But I obviously appreciate him as a footballer. And obviously you've got as you said before about your Irish roots. I understand where you would put your place.
Yeah.
So I was struggling for that last one until I thought of ball in, because I was like, Skulls, obviously he's great. There's loads of players that are great in that Man United team, but I was trying to think of players that I really liked, and I would have had a poster on my, I was just so sad. I used to have a wall in my bedroom that was other players. So I had a QPR wall, but then I had like other players on there, like Janinho. And,
yeah, you've still got that, haven't you? You've still got that wall.
If I had room in this office, it would happen.
Yeah.
Who have you got alongside Keane then? So Lee.
A very, very underrated footballer.
Gary
McAllister. Again, somebody who was remembered for something, which is missing a penalty in Euro 96 against England, which David Seaman saved. Very, very good footballer. Again, yeah, you know, well, it's a phrase we keep saying for this team.
The Liverpool thing. Like, I remember when he signed for Liverpool, and you were like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like he was like his mid-30s or something. And wow. Signing
into the season.
Yeah, and he was. He came from Leicester to Leeds when Leeds got promoted. It just seemed to work. It just seemed to fit. It was like Gary McAllister is almost Leeds' best player. And he was a very good player, and you know, he was very much deserved to win the league title that year because he was outstanding. And then obviously later in the decade, he goes to Coventry and he plays a big part in them staying up, still, you know, head and shoulders above a lot of the players in the team, to be quite honest. And then, as you say, again, at the turn of the century, he then signs for Liverpool, which everybody wasn't expecting. But I'm almost glad that he did do that.
Yeah, because that's when, because I remember when you said it and it said that's what you remember for, I actually thought of him at Liverpool first rather than.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of glad that he did do that because it means that people do remember him and do remember him. I might not necessarily have picked Gary McAllister without thinking about that as well.
Yeah.
You know, I could
pick him in his dream team. I don't know why. He was always my dad's first pick. And I used to be like, what about Shearer? And he'd be like, McAllister and Tisdale are always my dad's two go to. Yeah.
But they were enjoyable. I mean, they were enjoyable footballers, those two, I suppose. But yeah, I'm glad McAllister did. I'm glad McAllister did that. I'm just going to ignore that Letizia comment.
Go back, people.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a pretty solid. I think King can hold the middle, and Gary Mack can go forward and score the goals. And you've got Ince and Speed doing exactly the same thing.
Same thing. Yeah, exactly.
I would throw in a disclaimer that Gary Speed, I think, played on the left of the four at Leeds, but he could do both.
And I think they interchanged, if I remember rightly. They were a bit, if I remember rightly, how they used to play.
Yeah.
Because Strachan would go on the right, and then you'd have Batty, and
Yeah. So, as we've reached the last two, I'm now trying to work out.
I've got a Liverpool and a Man United left.
So I've got a Liverpool and an Arsenal left. Interesting.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go my Liverpool then.
Okay.
1990, obviously, because that's when they won the league. I don't think a better player. Again, this plays into growing up knowing if you've got the same one as well.
I'd say so. I'd be amazed. Yeah.
John Barnes. I think John, when he go, I wish I'd watched more John Barnes when John Barnes was at his height. Because I go back now and I've seen things and I hear people talk about it.
Yeah.
Somebody's probably, you know, he's quite opinionated in his current guys. I think people forget what a fabulous footballer. And then they also think about his struggles in the mid-90s with England, where he was booed, which is necessary as well. But he was such a footballer. Was Rolls Royce.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that left peg on that left side, the goals he used to score, like cutting in, and the speed and power he used to get on shots, cutting in from that side. There's a famous, I think it's against Everton. Yeah. Is it the one that you can, there's the cameras literally in the back of the goal and he gets it, top bins.
Yeah.
How you been that famous 4-4 draw? Yeah. And then that season they won the league, he was top scorer. He didn't even play up front. They had Ian Rush.
I know, yes, amazing. Brilliant at free kicks as well.
Brilliant at free kicks.
Yeah. I can even hear it now, the race for the championship, 89-90, and John Barnes takes a free kick against Arsenal, and Brian Moore says, Barnes curls it brilliantly, and it goes into the top corner, and it's such an amazing footballer.
And I think, you know, people remember the goal in the Macarena in the 80s as well.
Macarena, Jimmy the Americana.
Americana.
Oh my God.
From the 90s.
That is how 90s your brain is. Exactly. I think as well with Johnny Barnes is, I think, it's interesting that we talk about this because we both started liking football around the same time in that early 1990, and obviously he was in the World Cup and stuff. I think when you're starting to learn about football, there was two names that always came up, maybe from kids that were older than you or your parents or whatever, John Barnes and Diego Maradona.
Yeah,
they were always two names. Yeah. They were two names that I remember as a kid thinking people. John Barnes was the best player in England. Diego Maradona was just like the best player in the world. But he was. You also knew him as the cheat from a previous World Cup that obviously we have no memory of. But they were two big names, and yeah, I've gone for Barnes for that exact same reason. Because when you started liking football, it was like Maradona, Barnes, then Gascoigne. Probably after that, it was almost, and then Lineker or whatever. But you learnt about these. You learnt about these names, and John Barnes was one of those first names I've ever heard watching football.
Yeah, and he's also one of those quiz questions when they play. Do you remember when he played for and when he played for Cheltenham? Like,
yeah,
John Barnes played for Cheltenham in the 90s.
I know. Yeah, it's like I know it's 10 years. It's quite a long time, but that doesn't feel like it was in the same decade.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It really.
Sorry, Cheltenham fans.
It really doesn't. He played for Newcastle as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He?
Yeah. Okay, finish off then. So you've got an Arsenal, I've got Man United. So who is your Arsenal player?
Do you want to guess who my Arsenal player is?
Is he playing on the left or?
He's on the right wing.
So I was thinking Mark Overmars, but...
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I wanted you to say it. No,
yeah. I've not picked Mark.
No, I've gone for Anders Limpar, my friend.
Oh, you 90 beast.
I've gone for Anders Limpar because of that reason. He's a very, very early 90s name. It's a very Football League name rather than a Premier League name, even though he is in the advert. I do appreciate that. He's in the advert for the Premier League.
His actual wife. Fact.
Yes, it is. Yeah, in the advert. Yeah. But he's a very, very early 90s name. He's a foreign player in an age where foreign players were not as they are now, you know, everywhere. You know, it was, you know, which is, you know, absolutely, you know, fine. But he was one of a very, very small cluster, and he was a very, very good player.
Right.
And part of that title winning team as well in 91. So I've gone for Limpar. Just he's a very good, very, very good player. And also, I remember Steve to call him scoring from the halfway line once against Liverpool. So I always like that.
When people say, and it's usually you, Anders Limpar, why I always think of that, I think Arsenal and Leeds had this FA Cup game that went on for about 19 replays. And
Limpar
scored in one of those. And that's the first, Arsenal were winning that yellow and black away kit. And I was at Elland Road. I think
scored
in one of those games. That's my first, I don't know why, because maybe it's... The time when they used to have three or four replays, which seems alien now, like that is growing back.
Yeah. No, I say it's a recall that the summer that David Seaman signed, they signed a couple of players. His names probably escape me now. Probably, I think Siggy Jonsson was one of them. I may be wrong, but they had that sort of, they signed four or five players, and it was like, they've signed who? Anders Limpar, like a foreigner? What?
Yeah.
You know, and
George Graham, who obviously was.
Yeah. And yeah. Arsenal obviously with the famous English back four and the sort of the English midfield and the, you know, the English strike. They've signed who? So I've gone for Limpar.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good pick. I'm kind of kicking myself. I didn't think of Limpar actually. And Kanchelskis was another one I would probably have considered. We're finishing though on how very 90s this is as well. I went for Beckham. I'm a big fan of Beckham. And I think we've talked a lot actually quite ironically.
Yeah.
People, what are they remembered for? And I think the least thing David Beckham is actually remembered for is what a fantastic footballer he was. Like, and yeah. that's by design, partly because he's made a career for himself and a brand outside of football to be that he's this global ambassador and whatever else. Mm-hmm. But like, it's so that, you know, 96 to kind of 99 time when Beckham was a young, this, you know, hot kid with the hairstyle, with the pop star girlfriend. He was over everything, toys, stickers, magazines.
Yeah.
People also forget that none of that would have been possible if he wasn't a first-class footballer with a wand of a right foot that could... The crosses and the free kicks that he used to do still amaze me. Like, some of the assists and crosses. Like, no one still crossed the ball like David Beckham.
Like, yeah, no, definitely.
Some of the goals, especially in Madrid. If you go in his Madrid catalogue, if you go on YouTube and see, like, one of those compilation videos, some of the assists he had, especially for the original Ronaldo as well.
Yeah.
They're out of this world, and I put it down, and I kind of was reluctant, and I thought, no, I loved David Beckham as a player. Yes, I got sick of him, and kind of all that is where we all did in terms of going into the next leg and then everything that came around him. But as a player, I really think he still doesn't get the credit he deserves. So I went Beckham.
He was the first of our generation, I suppose. He was the first real poster boy, wasn't he? With the real cream adverts, and that he was.
Giggs had that kind of. But
this was another level to any of that. And also, I think so. The year that he scored the goal from the halfway line against Wimbledon, if you even just check that season, he either scores some fabulous goals or some really important goals. Like, I seem to recall a winner against Liverpool, which is obviously a big thing for a Man United player. I'm pretty sure he did that. He scored a wonderful goal at Tottenham where he pinged it into the top corner. I think he did another one against Tottenham in the FA Cup when it was a great free kick. There's one I think it's Chelsea, which is a volley inside the area, but the technique is awesome. And as you say, it gets forgotten to an extent how good he was because of everything that goes around it. And didn't he play the 99 Champions League final in centre midfield because Keenan Scholes weren't there?
Yeah, he did.
So it also shows that he was, you know,
I think he most wanted to play in centre midfield, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And I think, but like you said though, he wouldn't have reached those levels of international superstardom if he wasn't a good footballer. You know, if he was just David Beckham who played on the right for Southampton in the Premier League and, you know, they battled relegation every year, it'd be like, oh, right, do you remember that? He was a good-looking chap, wasn't he? But that's it. You wouldn't have remembered anything else. But because with a decent footballer came the trophies, then came the fame and the superstardom. They were all interlinked. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, and look at the clubs he played for. Like,
awesome. Yeah.
AC Milan. Yeah.
Right. LA Galaxy. You know,
even PSG, because at that point they were becoming the next level of PSG. Yeah. I mean, they weren't quite the level they are at. Well, are they at a level now other than winning the French League? I don't know. Don't think they ever will be. But yeah, so that's my. I think that we've done well there not to pick. Was it two players we had the same in the end?
I think we had. We had Barnes, Dorigo, and Colin Hendry, I think.
Oh, Colin, there's one I wouldn't have predicted.
Yeah. I wouldn't have predicted any of those three, actually, if I have the same. Pick. Oh, we had Cheer. Oh, sorry, we had Cheer as well. But that was it. But that doesn't count. Yeah,
that doesn't count. No, I was trying to think anyone else I'd consider. I had Adams at one point before I crossed him out.
Yeah, Lasso. I had him as well.
Yeah,
Adams, Lasso, Kanchelskis.
I really loved Emmanuel Petit at Arsenal.
Did you? Sincere apologies to Lee Chapman. I mean, there was a way we should have got Lee Chapman in there.
I mean, the strikers, I didn't really think of it. They were just done. I didn't even go down that later. Yeah. Right, we've missed out on, you know, Chris Sutton, Ian Rush.
It's funny, actually, when you said your strikers and you said from Arsenal from 1998, I literally was expecting you to say Nicholas Anelka. Because I don't think we actually appreciate, I'm speaking for myself, how good Nicholas Anelka was at that stage, because he was an 18-year-old kid who came in. I mean, Michael Owen was good as well, but they were definitely the same level. But
wow,
I would say Anelka was slightly better personally. But Anelka came in, and my God, like he blew teams away with his pace and power. And I think because he's a little bit of a strange cookie, Yeah, Le Solc and all that sort of stuff. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves, but he was a good footballer.
Yeah, good one. Not Christopher Ray then.
Yeah, we could have had him. Yeah, God, we could do this all day, couldn't we?
Let's not do it.
Alex Manninger, that was another one.
Yeah, right. Stop, because we will be here all day.
Yeah.
Try it yourself. See what teams you come up with.
Yeah. And Mark Atkins. There you go. That's my one. Right.
Oh, Blackburn's hard, in fairness, because we said Lee Sharp.
Tony Gale. God, my God, we could do this all day. Right, I'm going to stop.
Basically
now.
Do six teams each, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Ed, where can people follow you on the Twitterverse?
At Tavern Football.
Yeah.
Got it right. 19. Got it right.
And we'll be back soon. We want to do a show on fantasy football because since the new one started, we've been trying to plan that and it hasn't quite worked out. So that is coming. We're going to talk about the old fantasy football and probably review now it's actually finished on Sky One, but we'll probably have a little look back at how that's done as well. So maybe we'll do that soon. But keep adrift of the Twitter feed and keep it 90s.